Welcome to Sabbatical 101. My name is Bethany Walensky, and I'm an associate professor at Michigan State University. I had a life-changing sabbatical, and I'm on a mission to help fellow academics do the same. This podcast is a resource for all things academic sabbaticals. Each episode will provide you with inspiration and insight into the sabbatical planning process, regardless of your institution, discipline, length of sabbatical, or where you plan to sabbatical. I'm so excited to have you along for the ride. My guest today is Esther Alarcon Arana. I connected with Esther in an Academic Mamas Facebook group, and she agreed to share her sabbatical story. Esther's story is about when things don't go as planned during a sabbatical, and I really appreciate her willingness to share it. I hope that hearing this story will help us remember that even when we have the best plans for a sabbatical, life can happen and change that plan dramatically. Even so, as Esther describes, there are ways we can lean on friends and colleagues for support and ways we can give ourselves grace to slowly ease back into work after a crisis. Here's Esther's story. Hi, Esther. Thanks so much for being on the podcast today.
Hi, Bethany. Thank you for having me.
So before we get started talking about your sabbatical, could you just introduce yourself, tell us what institution you're at and what field you're in, just to give us a little bit of context and maybe, you know, a couple minutes about your research as well?
Yes. So I am an associate professor of Spanish at Salve Regina University. Salve Regina is in Newport, in Rhode Island. It's a very small Catholic institution. And in my research at the moment is I am working on music, Spanish music in Spain, and I'm concentrating on music that is feminist and that is challenging the typical heteropatriarchal culture that overflows everywhere.
Okay, great. And so you had a sabbatical that didn't go as planned, and I'm so grateful that you were willing to come on the podcast and talk about it, because I think, unfortunately, this is a reality, right? We have these wonderful plans for a sabbatical that we've been waiting for, and then life inevitably happens. And so could you tell us, first of all, was this your post-tenure sabbatical?
Yes, we never had a sabbatical before tenure.
Okay.
In my institution, they don't give sabbaticals before tenure.
Got it. And so I'm going to start by asking you, could you start by telling us just a little bit about the plan you had for your sabbatical, what you were looking forward to, and how you were thinking about it? And then we'll hear how the sabbatical didn't go as you had planned.
Yeah, well, so it is very funny because when I told my closest colleagues about what's going on, and that I had all these plans, which I'm telling you now about, a lot of them were like, yes, to me. So I'm not the first or the last one who's going to go through something similar.
Yeah.
So what happened? My plans, I got a fall sabbatical. It was going to be on the fall of 2023. I was really looking forward to it because the tenure, I got, you know, you get way more relaxed, I think, and I think that you can write and focus on your publishing a little bit better. And I had a project that span off a book that I had edited, and that was going to come out in the market in the fall of 2023. So the book did come out, and then I had this idea that about writing a whole monograph about music. So my proposal for the sabbatical said, you know, I am going to write a book proposal in one chapter. I was going to write one chapter in the summer and like the intro, and one chapter in the fall, and I was going to find a publisher. So I had all these things that I was going to do. And at the same time, I thought, and I'm going to relax. My son also was going to start kindergarten. And I just wanted to have, you know, to be home. I was not going to travel. I was going to stay put in my city, because my husband also is he teaches Italian at the same university where I teach. So, and we don't want to be separated. This is the funny thing, right? We don't want to be separate. We're going to be together. I want to be with my kids, and I'm going to write.
Yeah.
It started at the end of August. School started for the university. Then school started for my kid. So I was able to settle him in. And I was starting to go to campus to work. And I'm like, oh, taking all these pictures. Oh, look at this beautiful campus when you can enjoy it now that I'm just doing research. I don't have to be in a hurry to go to class. Then everything went upside down because my parents called me. I forgot to say I'm from Spain and all of my family is in Spain. And then my dad called me and he explained that he had been diagnosed with cancer. It was maxillofacial. It's a cancer that was taking over all of his face, like the sinus and all the face. So he was going to go, he was going to have surgery on September 25th. So it was all very quickly.
Yeah.
The cancer was really, really advanced. And that changed everything because I had to go to Spain. I was going to go there and be there before the surgery so I could be there with them before the surgery. But then I got COVID.
Oh, no.
I got COVID. It was all like.
Adding insult to injury. COVID always sneaks back in there.
And he was in the hospital. I couldn't get him sick or get other people sick.
Sure.
So. Because last year there was, it's like this year, like at the beginning of the semester, you get a lot of, you know, new COVID calls, everything. So I had to recover and I arrived like at the end of September, right after his surgery. And then I spent the whole month. So they were in the hospital in Sevilla, in Seville, in Spain.
Mm-hmm.
So I flew in there and I spent the whole month of October. I came back at the end of October. So that whole month, he was supposed to be there only for a week in the hospital. But it ended up that he stayed for the whole month because that surgery, they had to open the palate. So when I arrived, he didn't have a palate. They didn't close it in. And the idea was to close it in, but he got an infection.
Okay.
And so they never got to close it. So we ended up being we're not from Seville, we are from another city, province.
Okay.
So that meant that we had to be, my mother and I went to an Airbnb in front of the hospital. Then the experience was really bad and we had to change into a hotel that was right also next to the hospital. It was like a money pit. I'm still paying for that.
Yeah.
At this moment. So I tried. So I was also that. I forgot. That sabbatical, I was going to take a music class in my university.
Mm.
And I had enrolled in the class. I started going. I went in the month of, in September, I went to the class. And what I did manage to do is that while I was in Seville, I was like, okay, I'm going to continue taking classes. I'm going to continue studying. And I did. I managed to continue studying for that class, but I did not do any writing. I couldn't do anything. I just did the class in the evenings when I went home. My mother didn't. So the idea was that I was going to go to the, you know, we were going to change and she was going to be in the hospital a little bit and then I was going to be a little bit, but. She didn't want to leave my dad alone.
Mm-hmm.
She slept in the hospital every night. And she didn't let me sleep there. So I would go to the hospital. I couldn't go to the hospital at the beginning because I was still coughing.
Okay. Yeah.
But I was not contagious or anything. But it was really incredible because then when my dad, well, in any case, I didn't do anything.
Yeah.
I was just going.
It's totally overwhelming and difficult, right? It just sounds so hard. So of course you didn't do anything except, you know, take care of your mom and be there for your dad, right?
That's pretty much it.
Yeah.
And I was studying for this class because I didn't want to miss what I was studying. And it was, you know, and then what happened? Then towards the end, my mom got COVID because so the hospital had a room that was a shared room, and another patient came in and he had COVID. So he passed it to my mom. My father didn't test positive, but then when he was released from the hospital at the end of the month, he did test positive also. So everybody had COVID.
Yeah, that's so weird. Oh my gosh.
So basically I stayed there in Spain until I settled them in our house in our hometown. The surgery was not successful because even though they took away most of the cancer, like he also had cancer in it was touching the arteries. And if it touches, and if they do surgery there, he dies.
Yeah.
So they couldn't touch. The cancer was a very fast growing cancer. So they just sent him home. They were so I went back home. I came back here to the United States. So I spent the month of November here, but it looked like the cancer was growing really, really fast. And by Thanksgiving, he was put into hospice care in the hospital in my hometown. And that meant that in December, I went back home. I spent the month of November here. I was going to my classes, but I don't remember doing any work really. Like I was just talking to my parents on Messenger and just doing the class so that I could do something, but my brain was not here anymore.
Yeah.
In the meantime, my kid, while I was in Spain, got strep throat. It was for a week. I was sick. My husband was along with him. And then in December, when I went home again, I went by myself. So I went by myself. We had plans to spend Christmas with my family.
Mm-hmm.
We were going to fly on the 26th because it was a little cheaper. So just the holiday.
Right.
So what I did is that I flew in earlier, like on the 8th or so. And my family, my son and my husband, were going to come back in on the 26th. And then I went back and my father was in the hospital. I keep thinking about this, right? Because he was, basically we were waiting for him to die. I saw him. He looked good to me. I mean, he was, the color was not, like I had already been reading about the stages of palliative care and all this. And he was very skinny.
Mm-hmm.
So he was, because he had gotten a lot of weight just because he loved eating.
Yeah.
And he couldn't eat for the last 3 months. Because he had the palate open. So when he was discharged of the hospital, he had
a feeding tube or something?
Yeah, a feeding tube, exactly. He had a feeding tube and he was getting fed through the tube. I had gotten all the medicine while I was there. Then by the time when he was in palliative care, he decided that he didn't want to do that. So he removed the tube. And he tried, like I would bring like some of his favorite things, like bread with Spanish omelette, but very, not very well done, like less done. And he would like have a little bit, but very, very little. To see him not being able to, for him to not be able to eat, it's like, this is no life. I want this to be over.
Yeah. Yeah.
So he the doctor, the palliative care doctor was amazing. So he kept us all informed. She talked to him. His senses were perfectly there. He knew what he was doing, what he was refusing to do. And so I just went to the hospital every day and I spent the time with my dad. And I remember the 16th of December, I was like, oh, dad, you know, in 10 days, Javi's my son, Javi and Norman will be here. And he's like, Esther, this is too much time. And 3 days later, he just passed away.
I'm so sorry.
So basically, my whole sabbatical was that.
Yeah.
And then Christmas, you know, they came. We spent time with my mom. And the spring semester, I was supposed to go back to work. And I just couldn't do it. My mom just was not. So I spent, what I did is I stayed another month with my mom while my son and my husband stayed until September 7th. Not September 7th, January 7th, sorry.
Yeah.
So we did all the typical Christmasly things that you do for my kids. They didn't get to say goodbye to my dad, my son, you know, ask and everything. Yeah. And but then they went back and I stayed here until mid-January. I had requested, how do you call it, an FMLA leave. So I spent basically until April. I came back in April, at the beginning of April, to work. Mm-hmm. And honestly, January and February, I was just back and forth. Like, I stayed in Spain, and then in February, I went back to Spain to see my mother. I couldn't do anything.
Yeah.
No work. So basically, what I did was to paint the walls of my house. Like, it's thoughtless work.
Yeah.
Of my apartment here. And yeah. And then, well, because I am this year is my last year, but I am like the Northeast Modern Languages Association. I'm the area director for Hispanic and Lusophone. I had to go to the conference.
Okay.
I didn't have to go, but I thought if I go, my face, you know, my brain away from everything. And that was in March. I think the second week of March or so. So I went to the conference. I didn't prepare anything. I didn't do anything. I just went to do that job. But then when I was there, that actually, it spammed me, like it gave me a push.
Mm-hmm.
And then that's when I started writing again.
Okay.
You know, I'm still grieving. I am not, but I'm doing my work.
Yeah.
I'm doing everything now. And now it's fall semester of 2024 and I'm back full.
Yeah. Back full tilt. Right. And
yeah.
Oh,
so that it was very intense.
Really intense. And I just want to say, I'm so sorry about your dad and I'm so sorry that you had to go through that. I'm going to start getting choked up. I can relate a little bit. I also, my mom got diagnosed with a very advanced cancer and it did not happen as quickly as your dad, but I was there when my mom died. And so I just, it's so hard. And just that, yeah. And I can relate to this feeling of just not being able to focus on anything. I mean, when my mom started chemo, I basically left for 3 weeks to go be with her, kind of like you did with your dad. And I just fortunately had colleagues who could teach my classes and I couldn't do anything. So I can, I can completely relate. And I mean, my experience was not your experience, but I know how that feels to have a plan for something and then it just all gets wiped away and you're like, I can't even think about work. What is my work? What do I do? I don't, you know, it's just so far away.
And then you feel really guilty. You feel really guilty because you're not doing anything. Although at the moment I didn't care, to be honest. Like I was just with my dad and my mom. But then when I came back to the United States and I got the FMLA, I was like embarrassed.
Hmm.
Like, I should be working. Other people work, but I couldn't. I know that I wouldn't have been a good teacher. I wasn't there. So I'm glad I took the time, to be honest. Yeah. And I recommend it. I totally recommend it if that mm-hmm. is the case for somebody. And I did it because a colleague of mine told me, you know, you can get this.
Mm.
I was not going to do it. My plan was to go back teaching and then when I still go visit my mother and teach on Zoom. But my colleague said, you can do this. And I talked to the dean, the graduate dean, and he was super supportive. The administration was so supportive. My chair, the dean, everybody was like, you need to do this. Just take your time off.
Yeah. And I think sometimes as academics, we feel, or I'll speak for myself, I think that there's so much flexibility in the job. I can kind of make it work, but sometimes we just need the time.
Exactly. You just need the time.
Yeah. And so it's good to remember that we actually do have those benefits and protections that other people do.
I know. It's just that I felt guilty because other people who had gone through that didn't do it. And
sure.
I'm like, look at me, like other people didn't do it. There they are. And I am, I don't know, what am I, weaker? Am I taking advantage of the system? What am I like? So it's lots of bad thoughts.
Of course. Yeah. And then also I would say a counter to that would be, well, wouldn't it have been so much better for those people if they had known that they could take this or if they had taken it? Right. And kind of like maternity leave. I don't know. You know,
yeah.
I think sometimes women do this. We do this to ourselves where, you know, when women didn't have benefits for maternity leave or they had to kind of power through things and then they inflict that on kind of the next generation, like, well, I didn't have this, so why should you? And
because you want it to be better for us.
Exactly. Right. And so I think, you know, you spreading the word instead of, I think it's a really powerful thing instead of saying, oh, I just feel badly that I did this, saying, actually, this is something that other people can take advantage of and should when you're in a situation where you need some time.
Yeah. And one more. So by the end of March, beginning of April, I started working, like I started writing and getting productive. And I managed to do, like in the summer, I stayed here. So mm-hmm. I managed to do my proposal, 2 chapters, and work on other stuff. And that made me feel guilty too. And I have a colleague who keeps saying, wow, you've been really productive. And I was like, oh, and I'm like, yeah, I did it all in the summer. It's like I'm like, oh, I should be worse. I should not be capable of doing, I don't know. I don't know what to, how to explain it, but it's like, there was no way to win here.
Yeah. Well, I think grief is so challenging. So my mom died in January 2022. So I'm a little bit farther into this than you are. But I think I went to my therapist and said, I don't even know how to grieve. How do I do this? And I felt the same way. There are times that I think, oh, I'm not thinking about my mom enough and I shouldn't be doing this. But I know that sometimes I focus on my work because if I focus on the grief, it's just going to be too hard. And so there's something protective, I think, to being productive and to putting your energy into something that you also care a lot about and that's important to you.
Yes. And now, yeah, it is interesting what you're saying about like not being able to grieve and not knowing how to and not knowing, like, I just cry. And that's it. And like for the longest time until very recently, I was dreaming of my dad a lot. Mm-hmm. That really helped me. Now I feel bad because I miss him. I am not dreaming of him. And I talk to my mother every day because going through that made me like, okay, I want to take advantage. My mom is still here.
Yeah.
I want to talk to her. But one thing is that I really do not know how to. So this is the thing. I have another guilt, more guilt. 2 things. One, I don't know, like when she starts crying, I I just stay like blank. I don't know what to do. I don't know what to tell her. I don't know how to console her. And also, I call her every day, but I have a lot of work to do, like grading, teaching, preparing, writing. And then I'm like, okay, Mama, I'm going to talk, and I'm timing. I'm always timing our calls.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, I cannot talk, like, until the semester started, I could talk to her for like an hour or so. But now I'm like, okay, it's only 10, 15 minutes. And I feel horrible. But it's like, but I tell her, I'd rather talk to you like 10, 15 minutes every day. But then I get on my work door, because otherwise I just can't. It's like, yeah. So hard. You just feel a bad daughter, a bad teacher, a bad everything.
You're trying to support so many people. You're supporting your mom and her grief. You're supporting your son and his grief, however he's experiencing it. You're doing your job. You know, you're doing all the things, and then you have grief layered on this. And I think that what you're saying about kind of caring for your mom and helping her navigate her grief resonates with me so much, because this is what I've been doing with my dad. And it can be, I think it's hard. It's hard. I feel the same way. I'm like, oh, I should be doing more for my dad, or I should be doing this, or I should be doing that. And then I'm like, I barely have the bandwidth to take care of myself and my kids, like just the daily things, not even the grief part of it.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah. It's a lot. Yeah. This is a huge challenge. And I'm sorry I'm just so sorry for everything that happened to you and that you had to go through that. And I'm also sorry that that was your sabbatical.
The sabbatical was zero.
It was no sabbatical.
Was no sabbatical.
It wasn't time for you to kind of reset and recharge or do any of those things that sabbaticals are supposed to be for.
No, I had all these plans in groups, like in accountability groups or mom group, you know. Mm-hmm. And oh yes, I'm gonna do this. Like people explaining. Yes, my idea was like exercise a lot. Like I had a schedule, right? Yeah. I had a schedule for exercise, for cooking a lot. Since I'm home every day, I'm gonna cook all these good things. So exercise, cook, write. Like I was gonna have a schedule for all the things, and also like take like dates with my husband, because you know he was. Because now we have opposite schedules, our teaching schedules are opposite. So now we cannot do anything unless we get a holiday that our kid doesn't have. But so I'm like, oh, we're going to get this. Nothing.
Yeah.
Nothing.
It all flies
nothing.
Out the window.
But you can't even complain, because you cannot say, oh, my sabbatical went under, you know, because this other thing that happened was so much bigger that I'm like, I don't care, the sabbatical. And everybody understood, like,
sure.
At my institution. And at the end of the day, of course, I gave. And I'm just glad how supportive everybody was.
Yeah. I wanted to ask you about that, because I do think there's a concern about, you know, what I write in my sabbatical application. What if I don't do it all? Is there going to be a consequence? And so, you know, you had obviously a huge interruption that prevented you from, it sounds like you eventually did it, which is.
But not during the sabbatical.
Not during the sabbatical. So could you just talk a little bit about, you know, the kinds of conversations that you had or how that went for you? And what did your department chair or other administrators tell you about, you know, doing or not doing the things on your, that were in your application?
So the administrators, so the dean, the undergraduate dean was, if anybody has to take a leave of absence, this is you, just take it. And nobody asked me about my sabbatical. No, everybody assumed I was not doing anything.
Okay.
Also, I have been part of the sabbatical committee. I don't know if in every institution is like that, but we have committees. And I've been part of the sabbatical committee twice. And people, so when we write sabbaticals, we ask people to write things that are doable and not to be over, overexcited about what they think they can do, you know, like
don't a lot promise of people, everything.
Yeah. Some person in a sabbatical proposal said, oh yes, I'm writing a book and I have like this number of chapters, and during the sabbatical, I'm going to write like 4 chapters. I'm like, and I said, fine, I'm not going to say no to this proposal, but I'm going to say that if he gets 1 chapter, that's enough.
Yeah.
You know, like
that would be a reasonable goal.
Exactly. 1 chapter, yeah. 1 draft of an article, not even submitting the article, like getting, so because I already had experience with looking for a publisher for another book, I knew that I didn't have to get the publisher yet. In fact, I don't have it yet. What I need to do is the proposal to get it sent, right? Mm-hmm. So I didn't, to be honest, I didn't do anything during the sabbatical, but
yeah,
I don't know. I think that then what you do is like, but I'm used, okay. I am in an institution that has a heavy teaching load. I had a 4-3 teaching load. Now I have a 3-3 because I coordinate the language program. So, but I'm used to working when I'm doing all this stuff. And I, for whatever reason, and this is something that I always surprises me, since I got my kid, I got way more organized. I don't know, like
your time is more precious.
Yeah, I think that that's what it is. Like, because before I got pregnant and had my kid, I feel that I spent more time in front of the computer but got less done. And I think part of it is also not having the experience of doing it. Obviously, that's when I started teaching, right? So I teaching in a tenure track. But after I got my kid, then I got tenure, like everything, I got way, way more organized. So I do the things, and also not having the pressure of having to publish so you get tenure.
Sure.
I mean, it's all of the things. There is so many things that help.
Yeah. Well, and it sounds like at the end of the day, you had really supportive colleagues and administrators who understood that obviously this is not what you planned, and they helped relieve some of the pressure that, you know, there was no one saying, if you don't do this, then this. It's just kind of like, yep, that sabbatical happened the way it happened, and, you know, they were trying to support you and what you needed, which I think is really admirable.
Yeah, I started very, very, very slowly. I was part of a collaborative group in my institution that where I was working stuff for my book. And when I came back the day that the collaborative had to present something at an institution. So I was part of it. And so what I managed to, I started very, very, very little, like very small and then bigger. Right. So I'm like, okay, I'm going to prepare just a presentation for this. And that's what I did. So I presented, because on the book that I had edited, I had written a chapter also that related to what this book, the new book, is about, right? And so that helped me get something to present and also get my brain activated for what I was about to start.
Yeah. Yeah, and it sounds like you had very reasonable expectations as you kind of came back into, as you reactivated the work part of your brain.
I am very practical in that sense, very pragmatic.
Good.
That helps.
Yeah, it does, because otherwise we get, if we're too ambitious or like overly ambitious, then we end up just feeling guilty that we're never meeting that standard that we set for ourselves.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah.
So is there anything, you know, again, I feel like sabbaticals, at least for me, I started dreaming about my sabbatical almost as soon as I got my tenure track position. It just felt like this amazing privilege of having this job. And I think we put a lot of hope and a lot of faith into our sabbatical that it's going to do these things for us. But, you know from your experience that it doesn't always go as planned. So as you think about people who are maybe dealing with a sabbatical that is not going as they planned, or planning a sabbatical, do you have any kind of advice or wisdom that you'd be willing to share for thinking
about that? Well, I don't know. Maybe, hopefully.
Yeah.
So, well, first, I forgot to tell you that my ideal sabbatical was not to be home. My ideal sabbatical was go to Spain, do research, bring my kid and have him go to a school there so he could, like, get his Spanish better. But because of my husband having a job and us wanting to be together, I decided to do this. And then all of that happened. So nothing was dreamlike.
Yes.
And I mean, some people do get their sabbaticals. I have a colleague from another institution who's now in Greece doing her sabbatical, doing my dream sabbatical. She's with her family in Greece. Her kid is going to school there and all this. Oh, she has a baby, I think. So what can you do? I think that if things happen, I would say, talk to your colleagues, because a lot of people have gone through this before. So what I would say is talk to them and ask them, what did you do? How did the administration react? How did you come back from this? Mm-hmm. Because, I mean, as you said, having supportive colleagues helped me through my sabbatical. It helped me through maternity leave. It has helped me adapting in this new institution, which is so different from where I was before. So that's what I would say. Talk to your colleagues. Talk to your Akamama group.
Yes.
because to me, I think there is a lot of wisdom there. Yes. And be flexible. That is, I think, key. Being flexible, knowing that life happens, and that as long as you are healthy, and that is the most important, because you can come back from anything.
Yeah.
You just have to be healthy, be for your family and be for and your academic stuff. Like if I had to go for full now, which I can't, when I do go, that is going to be part of my narrative. And in my narrative, I'm going to explain, I did this, I didn't do this in this time because these are things that happened. And most of the people are human and they understand that.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah. And it sounds like, I mean, in your case, I think there's just this huge, overwhelming thing that you couldn't focus on your work. You had to focus on your family and just let it be. But I think sometimes when maybe there's a smaller pivot we need to make or something else that's not quite as life-altering happens, we think, oh, we can kind of power through it, or we, you know, the work we have to get done is still so important. But I think it's important to remember that we have to take care of ourselves too, and that, you know, the work is not always as important as we think it is.
I know. And I thought about my students too, because I thought, okay, who are they going to get if I go back to work now? They're not going to get me. There was no Lexapro that was going to help me go power through that. You understand? Like my students, I was going to be angry. I was going to be crying. I was not going to be, I am very focused. I am the kind of person who usually powers through things through work. I do work because that helps me deal with other stuff. This time that was not the case. I knew it and I dealt with it.
Yeah.
And I think you need somebody to tell you if you're not that kind of person, you need somebody like me to push you.
And well, sometimes we just need permission, right? We need permission to let up on the gas a little bit or to not be so high achieving. I think I say this to clients all the time, like most of us, if you're a tenure track professor and you have a sabbatical coming up, or, you know, if you're being successful, you probably don't need anyone to help you be more productive, right? You probably, we're very good at that. Most of us are self-motivated and very productive. But what we do need sometimes, I think, is someone to give us permission to not be as productive or to take care of ourselves or to take a break when we need a break. And so I appreciate you being that voice. So maybe someone who's listening to this podcast episode, who's going through something challenging on their sabbatical or not on their sabbatical, will be prompted to think about, you know, are there ways that I can step away a little bit from work and take care of myself so that I can show up better, you know, next week or next month or whenever it is.
Mm-hmm. Yes, you're right.
Thank you so much, Esther. I really appreciate you being willing to share your experience. I know it's probably not easy to talk about, but I also know from experience that it's sometimes nice to tell your story and to be able to share it. And so I know that your story and your advice is going to benefit so many listeners, and I really appreciate it.
I hope so. Thank you so much.
Thanks so much, Esther. I hope you found this episode of Sabbatical 101 helpful and inspirational as you think about your own sabbatical. If you want to read more about sabbaticals or get even more support for planning your own life-changing sabbatical, head over to my website, www.bethanywalinsky.com, to read my blog and for more information about my sabbatical coaching program.